702
on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Streaming on 702.co.za.
The 702 app.
And on DSTV channel 856.
Just gone 7 minutes past 6 o'clock. Good evening from me, Ray White, and for Bruce on The Money Show, which is brought to you by APSA Corporate and Investment Banking. The bravery to imagine and the will to get things done. That's Africanacity. APSA is a registered FSP. Well, coming up on your program in the next hour, talking shortly about the new spectrum. It's taken years to get you. Finally, we have some sort of a plan. What does this mean, though? Then talking about the new medical aid merger to create Sizwe Hosmed. Leading South African-owned agri-fintech startup Hala Choice has announced the finalization of a major investment. It involves Standard Bank, so more on that one. It's the Friday File, where we concentrate on a certain sector of business. So talking to Aspire Art Auctions, asking about art. Is it an investment? Do you have that piece that you've kept for such a long time and you perhaps thinking about it, you want to see if it's worth something? So Aspire Art Auctions, they do a specific type of art. An interesting conversation coming up. And then later on, the Brutal Biz Quiz, your chance to be the champion of The Money Show. So I'd like to hear from you. You can SMS me on 31702 or 31567 or leave a WhatsApp voice note message on 072 702 1702.
702. Let's walk the talk.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
So let's jump right into it. And communications regulator ICASA has set out a timetable for the licensing of so-called high-demand spectrum, saying it plans to expedite the long-delayed process. For the first time, the regulator has published a detailed schedule for when it plans to get key aspects of the licensing process concluded. Now, this starts today, the 1st of October, with the publication of an information memorandum for consultation. So it's one step forward, at least. On the line is the founder and editor at Tech Central, Duncan McLeod. Hi, Duncan. Good evening. So what exactly does this mean now?
So good evening, Ray. Thanks for having me. So this is following on from the consultations or the out-of-court discussions that have been happening in recent weeks between industry players, at which there was no settlement reached. We know that Telkom and Media Holdings brought litigation against ICASA. They were not happy with the invitation to apply and the way ICASA drew up that invitation to apply, saying that it didn't consider various factors, including the impact on competition in the market. And they took it on review, and the High Court basically sided with the litigants. And ICASA decided recently that it's in the interest of getting this process wrapped up. They weren't going to fight this in court, and they abided by the court's decision. And so they're basically restarting the process and republishing the invitations to apply for both the high-demand spectrum, the spectrum that will be used for 4G and in part for 5G infrastructure, and reissuing the ITA or the invitation to apply for a wholesale open access network, which is related to all of this. Now, they've put together this timetable, which is an incredibly tight schedule, and I think many people in the industry will be quite skeptical about whether this is going to be, in fact, be possible, particularly if there's a lot of unhappiness over what the contents of these two ITAs is when they get published. The Spectrum ITA will be published on the 10th of December of this year, and ICASA is hoping that they're going to start the auction process for the Spectrum on the 1st of March next year. Very tight schedule and lots of questions that need to be answered here, and no doubt there'll be a lot of discussion that takes place when ICASA receives feedback and from the industry players, from the big operators and other interested parties, particularly around issues like is there a proper assessment of competition in the sector, and have ICASA done that properly, and what does it mean? You know, there's billions and billions of rand at stake here for the different operators, and I think if there's any sign that that any of them might feel that they're being mistreated through this process, I don't think they're going to pause to take the matter on review again. And if that happens, then this could be delayed again. But one hopes that you know, the political will seems to be there now. This seems to be being driven from the president on down. So one hopes that this is the final part of this process and isn't going to be derailed again by litigation or some other reason.
No, I hope not, because we waited for this for such a long time. Why are we in, it's a bit of a messy situation, because you're talking about deadlines, you're talking about people wanting to move very fast. Aren't you worried, though, if we do that, mistakes will be made or the process won't be concluded properly?
That is the concern, that that mistakes are made along the way and that this gets taken on review at the courts again, because if this goes back to the courts and has to go through the court system, and no doubt it would be challenged through the High Court, through the Supreme Court, all the way to the Constitutional Court, because of the gravity of this, of this spectrum allocation process, then we're looking at another five-year delay like we had before. And we can't afford that as a country. We were supposed to allocate the spectrum 10 or 12 years ago already. South Africa has never actually allocated spectrum for 4G LTE services. And the only reason we have 4G LTE is that the operators have been able to reallocate some of their 3G and 2G spectrum to offer LTE services. So it's a miracle we actually have mobile broadband in South Africa at all, because the spectrum has never been allocated.
Mm.
And this spectrum allocation process we're going through now is actually the first of two spectrum allocation processes that have to happen. Beyond this, we have to have an allocation process for 5G spectrum. So that's going to be the next bun fight. But we need to get this one out of the way. It should have happened a decade ago. We need to get it done urgently and then move with speed to assigning 5G spectrum as well.
My word, this is quite a challenge ahead. Founder and editor at Tech Central, Duncan McLeod.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
When it comes to medical aids, choice is vital, so you will soon have another option, and I like this. The Council for Medical Schemes has approved the merger of the HOSMED medical scheme and the Sizwe Medical Fund as well, creating South Africa's eighth largest open medical scheme. The merger brings together Sizwe's almost 47,000 membership with HOSMED's 21,000. According to these membership numbers, the merged entity becomes the eighth largest medical aid scheme in our country. So you have choice there. Well, joining us is Dr. Simon Makwa, who's the Principal Executive Officer at the Sizwe Medical Fund. Hi, Doctor. Good evening. Welcome to The Money Show.
Good evening, Ray. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, tell us about creating a combined medical aid. How does that work?
Yeah, so we're quite excited about this merger. The process really is just coming together of two like-minded schemes that are looking at growth opportunities and that are looking at themselves and saying, look, we are the best partners in the market to merge. This particular merge has been tried two times before and for one or other reasons could not succeed. And we are quite proud as a team that we've been able to crack this deal and bring this very exciting measure to the market.
So what does this mean for the man or woman in the street? Is this some sort of great deal for them? Why should they perhaps go towards this new merged medical aid?
Well, that's a very good question, because members are, as you know, the lifeline of any medical scheme. And any medical scheme wants to grow its membership. And what we are saying to the market and to the South African population is that in our space right now, we are at a period, Ray, what we call the open window period. This is a period where members can move to and fro each scheme without any penalties. And we are bringing this measure at the right time where members need to look at the price point that Sizwe HOSMED provides and look at the benefit options and the richness of those benefit options and say, wherever I am as a medical scheme, am I getting the best value for money? And I think for us as Sizwe, that is the number one thing, that we want to create value for money for the members. And I think any member who is a direct pay members or they belong to a certain employer groups really need to look at those things, the richness of our offering and the competitive price point that we have at Caesar Horsnet.
You see, that's quite interesting. A lot of people do complain about high medical aid prices. They say, I can't pay 4,000 Rand a month. I can't. Do you think, perhaps, Doctor, that medical aids are absolutely priced out of the ballpark, that there is a lot of room to grow to say, you know what, come, like you've said, come to us and you'll have a pleasant surprise?
Well, look, I mean, we are aware that medical aid payment is a grudge payment. And we are aware that the economy is sluggish, irrespective of the recent numbers that we have received from Treasury, that in general, the economy is in a very bad state. And that puts a lot of pressure on the members' pocket. However, what we are saying is if you look around and shop well, you will find that you do get medical aid schemes. And in those schemes, there are options where one could really have good value for money, where you pay a very competitive tariff per month. And yet you look at the benefits that you get. You look at the in-hospitalization benefits that you get, and you look at out-of-hospitalization benefits that you get. So I do agree that it is quite a lot of money for most of our people. However, at Caesar Horsnet, we believe that we are the best medical aid for those type of people that are feeling the pinch, that they can come to us and enjoy very rich benefits in this.
So you get the giants like Discovery. How do you stand up against them? Because they seem to be the all-empowering. They are going to just sort of juggernaut over you. Can you stand up to them? Is it a case versus David versus Goliath?
Well, I mean, we think that we can stand up to anybody in the market. I think for us, if you think about it, the power and the effort that we took to bring a measure during COVID, number one, during a sluggish economy, really talks to how well the two schemes are run. And yes, there are bigger players than us, but to be the eighth in a industry that has got well over 62 schemes, it's not a small feat by any chance. And not only that, out of all of those 62 or so schemes, we've got the fourth largest solvency ratio. That also our financial prudency in terms of running the scheme. So we do have bigger players. We are not worried about those. We are worried about and concerned about the members that are in the scheme and the members that do want good value for money. And those are what we are after. Those are our targets. And really, the big boys can do what they do, but we believe we are in our space.
Yeah.
And we believe that we've got very, very good prospects of growing in this space.
That sounds really good. Dr. Simon Mankwakwa, he's the Principal Executive Officer at the Caesar Medical Fund. I wish you the greatest and best of luck for the future.
702, let's walk the talk.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
Right, leading South African-owned agri-fintech startup, it's called Hello Choice, has announced the finalization of a major investment. It involves Standard Bank. They're getting some more investment, more money. This concerns the digital fresh produce and agricultural market. Didn't even know that there was a sort of sector, but it's a massive sector. Hello Choice is a proudly South African success story, founded in 2019 or 2018 by Grant Jacobs and Graham Jarvie. Well, Grant Jacobs joins us now. He's the CEO of Hello Choice. Hi, Grant. Good evening and welcome.
Hi there, Ray.
So, hi. Take us through the creation of Hello Choice and how it works. Take us through your story.
Yes, hi there, Ray. Ray, Hello Choice is a wholesale online agricultural marketplace. And when we started in 2018, our main aim was to really make it much easier for sellers of agricultural products, mostly farmers, to be able to access buyers digitally online. We started in fresh produce, but we've actually subsequently expanded into quite a number of other products.
Well, Grant, if you could just move around a little bit, the cell phone rings are getting much better, much better. Okay, so you've sort of broken into the market. You've cornered the market. You have opposition as well.
Yes, definitely. There are a number of other, you know, platforms that have, you know, that have started. But in fact, generally, this is a fairly new sector. When someone looks at agricultural food supply, it is probably one of the sectors that in fact hasn't really been touched by technology. The kind of same way that in fact other sectors have been. So there are other players, but it is a fairly new sector.
Right. So with Standard Bank arriving, a large investment, what happens next?
Well, really, part of our plan is to further grow our technology platform. As we found, more and more farmers are finding out about HelloChoice, are starting to come onto the digital platform. So what we are putting is a significant investment into our web app, mobile app. And in fact, we are also obviously expanding our marketing programs. Also, part of our plan with Standard Bank is in fact to expand into African cross-border trade. Hence investment from Standard Bank.
Has it been difficult getting people to change their mindsets when it comes to going digital, going online?
Yes, right. This is quite a challenge, especially because HelloChoice is in fact a wholesale market. And what that means is we actually really deal primarily with businesses. It's kind of very different to if you're buying a pair of Nike online or a pair of shoes. We're actually dealing with products. We're dealing with sizable. We're dealing with sizable sums. We're also dealing with products that are not standardized. You know, if someone's looking at an onion, a potato, a dry bean, the sort of quality varies where it's coming from. So yeah, definitely. You know, getting farmers to come on, getting buyers to come on is in fact quite a process. But the thing is, what we find is once they start to understand and see the value of the speed, efficiency, being able to actually do things much cheaper and much quicker, they, in fact, come on very, very quickly.
Yeah. I'd imagine there is sort of quite a bit of advertising and marketing that goes with HelloChoice when it comes to farmers. Or do you just approach them and say, hey, guys, we've got this great product. This is what we can do for you.
It is really a combination. I think one in fact, you've actually got to get out to farms and buyers. You've got to see them in your farms, in your stores. Number two, you've got to advertise in different, you know, sort of media platforms, you know, online, social, print. Plus also there are quite a number of industry associations you also work with. So it is quite a process to get the, you know, message out to everyone, get them to understand how in fact HelloChoice works. Get them to actually test it. But the thing is, once they've seen it and start to see the value of it, they actually take to it very, very quickly.
That sounds fascinating. HelloChoice's CEO, Grant Jacobs, thank you so much for coming onto the Money Show this evening. That's a great platform to have. A lot of people these days thinking it's the old traditional market way. Go down to the market, sell your wares. Not anymore. Now, it's all online.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Right, let's see what happened with the oil share in the markets today. Nick Kunzer is a portfolio manager with Sunlum Private Wealth. Nick, hi, good to chat to you once again.
Yeah, good evening, Ray White.
So,
made it through to Friday, yes.
You did. The markets also made it through to Friday. But what happened today down at the close?
Yeah, not a great story. I wish I could be more positive, but we finished off quite a torrid third quarter. We gave quite a bit back, and we were hoping for a bit of a positive start to the fourth quarter today, the first trading day, and unfortunately it was quite disappointing. The JSE All Share giving back almost 1%, 0.97%, and the top 40 as well also down just over 1%. So it was not a great day in the office today.
Yeah. What's happening? I mean, we had Tencent, we had the Chinese tech shares, we had that whole thing affecting our JSE. Is that the only thing that's affecting? What else is going on?
I think there's a lot else going on, and I think that is the problem. We've gone from sort of being predominantly focused on lockdown and COVID and getting vaccinated and getting back to business. But in the meantime, there's a couple of risks that all of a sudden have been popping up. We've got the Democrats are still fighting at the moment over Joe Biden's infrastructure bill with a debt ceiling to worry about in America. You've mentioned Chinese tech. Outside of that as well, you've also got problems with energy. You've got the British are beating each other up on the petrol forecourts. There's no energy over there either, and petrol and oil. And there's a whole lot in the pot. So it just feels like, Ray, that the risk has certainly sort of been elevated in the near term, and that's been reflected in the red on our screen today.
Yeah. And then the Rand as well. The Rand this morning, what, 15.12? It recovered a bit today, 14.87 at one point. What's driving the Rand? I know that J.P. Morgan at one point said, look, you know, the Rand's yesterday's thing. But what's affecting, what's causing all this volatility then?
Well, I mean, the Rand per se is actually not really a reflection of South Africa Inc. I mean, the Rand is very much a proxy for emerging markets, and it's become almost a proxy for risk, so for risk on and risk off. So when everyone's feeling happy, everyone's feeling good, and the emerging market currency strengthen, and the Rand being the world's most liquid emerging market currency, that tends to get the benefit of it. But when things feel risk off, like they've done recently, then unfortunately the Rand gets sold. And I also do think to a certain extent, given what we saw happening out of China, and obviously Naspers and Prosus exposure to Tencent, I think it was an easy sort of, the Rand became a sort of the whipping boy for Chinese tech to short the Rand. So, but yes, needless to say, it's a long answer, Ray. Apologies, but volatility is here to stay in the Rand, that's for sure.
Yeah. This new stock exchange in Cape Town, tell us more.
It's an existing entrance. They've got a stock exchange license. It's changed its name. I think wanting to tap into a little bit of the fintech space and a bit of the stuff that's happening in the Cape Town. So watch the space. Look, they're going to need to attract more people and more listed companies to the bourse, and they need to get liquidity because they're the ones that have been knocking around for a better part of a few years. They're really battling with liquidity. So if they can get that right, then we'll watch that space. Maybe it's another competitor.
Yeah, why not? Why not? Right, movers and shakers for today. I saw a few people actually up on the day.
Yeah, so it wasn't all doom and gloom. I think you can certainly credit Mr. Ramaphosa, our president, for contributing to that, because after last night's meeting, it was all about the reopening stocks. So top of the leaderboard, City Lodge up 6.35%, Sun International 5.19%, Sogo Sun 4.92%, and so on. So very much about the hotels and tourism. And if we can get that right with getting off the UK red list, then there's probably some more legs to the upside for these shares. And then also Netcare also had a decent day, 2.5%. And so it wasn't all doom and gloom. There was a little smattering of green on the screen as well.
Yeah. Concern, though, last night going to lockdown level one, but at the end of this year, they are predicting that we may be hit by a fourth wave. In fact, they are predicting we will be. Mm. Are you concerned about that as well? Has this been factored into the whole equation?
Look, it's different from an investment point of view and what we're looking at. I don't think it's as bad as we think. Certainly, I mean, I think we're timing on our sides too, in the fact that we're going to be smack bang in the middle of summer. I think the Northern Hemisphere has got more concerns with a potential fourth wave coming, although majority of their citizens have been vaccinated. But no, I'm not massively concerned about a fourth wave here, at least not for now, heading into the summertime.
Yeah. Nick Kunze from, he's a portfolio manager at Sunline Private Wealth. Have a great weekend, and we'll chat to you again next week, I'm sure, next Friday.
The Money Show is brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. The bravery to imagine and the will to get things done. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP.
The Money Show.
The Friday File.
The Friday File.
Right, so the Friday File, that's where we concentrate on a certain sector of business. And talking tonight about the art sector and talking about Aspire Art Auctions. Our guest is Roark Peffers, who's the Managing Director at Aspire Art Auctions. Hi, Roark. Good evening. Welcome.
Hi, good evening.
Right, how would you describe yourselves in your art, your company? Tell us more.
In a word, I would like to think innovative and forward-looking, but I think very much our approach and, you know, our value system is very much to do with, you know, with the continent and with being representative and with being pan-African. I think there's a lot of interest in the art and the culture that emanates from this continent. There's a lot of global uptake, and that's very much the space that we function in.
Mm. Right, pan-African art. When were you established?
So we started in 2016.
Okay, so it's been a while now. All right. How did you get together? What was the establishment? Did you get together with some friends? Were you sort of part of the art community and thought, well, hold on a second now, pan-African art, there's a gap here in the market?
I think so. You know, I suppose the art industry in South Africa is fairly small. All of us who started the company together had worked together or overlapped variously at different points in our career. And I think that we saw an opportunity in as much as there wasn't really a house that concentrated on representing the continental art, but also with a distinct focus on not just the modern art, but also on contemporary art, and to respond to the global appetite that there is from institutions, from collectors, from a variety of different places for the art that is produced and that has been produced on Africa.
So the market is there, but I'm thinking COVID-19, because throughout COVID, two things happened. Number one, everything closed down. And number two, companies decided to not invest in art. Art could be seen as a luxury. Were you quite adversely affected?
So the past 2 years have been quite interesting for the arts industry. I think it did have a negative impact on a lot of businesses. But then for some, you know, in some ways, it was almost quite fortuitous in a way what it presented, because we had always been positioned or had always very much positioned ourselves in a very online digital space. But there had been a bit of reluctance on the part of collectors to engage in that way, because I think I think people like the, you know, the openings, the physical aspect of the art industry, of going to shows, of looking at exhibitions. And there were always perhaps a bit reticent to engage and to really fully start engaging with auctions in a purely online capacity. And then, you know, 2020 happened and that decision was almost taken away from all of us, and we were thrust into the space where that was really the only way we could deal. And what we found happened was that, you know, the desire to engage and the collectors remained, you know, the desire to buy art and to be involved in the industry stayed, but the format changed. And I think for those businesses who were able to pivot and to be agile within those conditions, they've actually had a pretty good couple of years within the, you know, the context of the environment.
Yeah. All right, then tell us about art as an investment. You always hear about a Picasso. You hear about these lovely sort of paintings, but they're all Eurocentric, etc. Tell us about Pan-African arts. What's its value? What stands out for you? What can a person go and buy at your auction?
Look, I mean, I would go so far as to say that I think, you know, there's a lot more value to be found in art from South Africa and from Africa, really, than to a large extent the type of art that you're referring to, because in a lot of ways, the value is already right up there. You know, to buy American or European artists, it's already extremely expensive, and you know, you're invariably buying it in a dollar or euro currency. And that there's a lot more scope for growth and value with artists from here, particularly as the rest of the world starts to come round to the fact, you know, to appreciate the quality and the relevance of the art that's being made here. It increases the value. And I think that you can still, you know, for the equivalent of, say, $20,000, you can still get immense value in art from Africa. Whereas for $20,000, there's not a huge amount you can buy from a gallery or auction house in London or in New York. So as a general rule, for those people who address it from that point of view, I think there's a general perception that, you know, it's a hugely good investment, and there's huge value to huge gains to be made.
Yeah. So in other words, are you looking at quite a few international buyers then coming in? Because you, like you said, $20,000, let's go pick up something in South Africa. Is that the case? Are you seeing a lot of international people coming to our country, going online?
Yeah, you know, we've been very fortunate that there has been. I mean, in fact, we had a look at it last year, and over the course of 2020, somewhere in the region of 70% of what we sold by value was actually bought by people outside the country. And, you know, not just expats, but, you know, people of different nationalities. You know, we sold art to South America. We sold art to all sorts of places that we never really would have considered 5 years ago would be vying for African art. But increasingly, it's a global commodity.
Mm. So if somebody thinks they've got something, and just listening to what you just said there, if somebody thinks that they have some sort of painting or something they found in an attic, there's always that whole romantic thing about, I found something in the attic. What do they do? Can they come to you? Will you appraise it? How does it work?
Yes, absolutely. you know, in this day and age, technology makes it so easy. You know, when I started my career 20 years ago, it used to be a much longer process. But now with WhatsApp, you know, it's literally people will take a photograph with their phone. They'll WhatsApp something to you with a short description, albeit just the dimensions of the work. And literally based on that, you can be quite accurate in the kind of valuation you can provide. Additionally, then, you know, you can do it through our website. You can send email inquiries. But there's various ways in which you can access, you know, a vast knowledge base and skill set to find out what your things are worth.
Is it all about name, though? I mean, if you have a Rembrandt or something like that, there's always the name that's there. But if you have a Ray White, you might go and, okay, we'll pass, actually.
Yes, sadly, there is some truth to that, I think. you know, we all go to art school hoping we're going to grow up into Picasso or into William Kentridge. But, you know, it's a very select few who really become that. But I think a lot of the value does reside in the name brand. I think that to a large extent, you are buying the name brand. And, you know, there's a lot of great artists who are technically great artists, but they didn't become the brand that is, you know, William Kentridge, and therefore they don't hold that kind of value. So I think when you're considering purchasing art, I really think you do yourself a great service by getting advice and finding out, you know, before you dip your toe in the water, do the homework, speak to who you can, and really access the vast kind of knowledge base and skill sets that we have in this country and globally, which are really resources for collectors that they really should utilize.
There's a lovely SMS here. It reads, Ray, do you still have to die to make sure that your art is worth something? And I think that's lovely. How does that even work? Because you may find a few aspiring artists are coming through now, yet in 50 years' time, that 20 Rand painting is worth, a, I don't know, 2 mil.
Yeah, lovely, albeit a bit macabre. you know, Ray, it perhaps used to be a bit more like that, but, you know, increasingly we have found the art industry and art has been increasingly commodified. And I mean, you look around at the great artists of today, you know, Damien Hirst, who did that very famous auction at Sotheby's in 2008. There's Jeff Koons. We have William Kentridge and a slew of other quite prominent and well-known artists. And, you know, quite honestly, the having to die before you become worth much isn't really that true anymore. You know, what it implies is that it means that your produce, you know, your body of work becomes a finite sum. And yes, certainly therein is an element of value. But, you know, a lot of artists, you know, they're a brand. They create products and they have value because of that artist. So increasingly, we're seeing that misconception being debunked.
All right. Final question then. People want to know, how do they get hold of you? In other words, if there's an art auction, how often do you have them? Are they in Johannesburg or Cape Town? Just take us through that.
So we do both. We just had one in Cape Town. In fact, I'm talking to you from Cape Town now, but I'll be back in Johannesburg in our Joburg office as of Monday. We do basically an auction per season. So there's two in Johannesburg a year and two in Cape Town per year in terms of the live auctions. But then also we do online auctions, which are generally for the smaller artworks. But very excitingly, we have a prominent Johannesburg collector. Well, quite sadly, in fact, the partner of a prominent Joburg collector died earlier this year, and we're going to be selling the collection in the month of October. So it's something that we're all quite excited about. It's an amazing collection of art from this continent. And it'll be an additional thing in our auction calendar before our Johannesburg auction in November. Yeah. But if anybody would like to find out or if anybody would like to get in touch, they are most welcome to. And it's very easy to do it through our website, which is aspireart.net. And on that, we have all of our specialist details, you know, where our offices are located, as well as all the information about the sales. So you're almost welcome to go and have a look. And please do feel free to get hold of us whenever you need.
Very nice. Roy Kapeffers, who's the managing director at Aspire Art Auctions. Lovely, fascinating chatting to you on The Money Show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
There you go. Go buy yourself some art. But perhaps you don't feel that art is your thing. Well, it's time for the Brutal Biz Quiz. And maybe, just maybe, you'll be the champion of this week. This is the ultra fun part of Bruce's show. I'll be asking you a series of questions. If you are the last person standing, well, simple. You'll be the champion of the Money Show for the week. That means you can phone Bruce on Monday, tell him I sent you, and he will recognize you as the champion of the Money Show. So, a series of questions. All you have to do is call me 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567, and let's see if you are the champion of the Money Show. Right, first question. Come on, it's an easy one. Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana has been appointed governor of which multilateral development bank? I'll give it to you again. Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana has been appointed governor of which multilateral development bank? Give me a call, 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
7 minutes to 7 o'clock, and I think I've got you stumped, actually. Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana has been appointed governor of which multilateral development bank? 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. We are playing the Brutal Biz Quiz tonight. I'll be asking you a series of questions, and if you get them right, if you're the last person standing, you're the champion of the Money Show. Right, Pamela in Benoni. Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
And the answer is?
It's Capitec Bank.
Oh, Pamela, no, it's not. It's not. It's not. Oh, okay. Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana has been appointed the governor of which multilateral development bank? There we go. Development bank. That's the clue. Sapang in Mabopane. Hi, good evening. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello, welcome. What's the correct answer?
The BRIC Development Bank.
It is indeed, Sapang. You see. Now, my money's on you. The fairly new finance minister, Enoch Godongwana, has been appointed a governor of the new development bank. It's a multilateral development bank established by the BRICS nations. And we've lost Sapang. We've lost him. Oh, no, come back. All right, 011-883-0702. Maybe you can pick it up. The bank has issued a notice on the stock exchange news service providing an update on its new directors. Now, Godongwana's appointment has been effective on the 17th of August, 2021. Sapang, let's see if we can get you back on, because I really want to ask you the next question, which is the following. It's an easy one. Which European country that has South Africa in its red list reported the highest level of fuel prices in 8 years? Ooh, which development, which European country that has SA in its red list reported the highest level of fuel prices in 8 years? In fact, they've had a really bad day today. They really have had a bad day today. 2,000 petrol stations around that country saying, you know, we've got a bit of a problem here. We can't give people any petrol, and people are getting angry about it. Let's go to Ndumiso in Centurion. Hi, Ndumiso. Sapang, his line dropped, I'm afraid. Do you have an answer for the second question? Maybe you are a brain of the Brutal Biz Quiz tonight.
Hello.
Hi, Ndumiso. What's the answer?
Is it the UK?
It is indeed. Very nicely done. Nice one. So, prices for fuel in the UK have reached their highest level in 8 years as petrol stations run dry amid panic buying. That's been the big thing. All right, my money Ndumiso is on you tonight. Next question. Which statutory body released a report on the Digital Vibe saga, which implicated the former health minister Zweliam Mkhize? I'll give it to you again. Which statutory body released a report on the Digital Vibe saga, which implicated the former health minister Zweliam Mkhize? Ndumiso?
Is it the SIU?
It is indeed. Congratulations. Well done. Yeah, that's right. This week, the SIU report into the irregular awarding of 150 million Rand communications contract by the health department known as the Digital Vibes matter was released. And they've called for all sorts of prosecutions there and all the rest of it. I tell you what, Ndumiso, my money is on you tonight. I know that you're going to be getting this. I'm going to ask you, one more question in this whole thing. Which famous musician was able to remove her father as her legal guardian? This is the final question. If you get this right, you are the champion.
I think it's Britney Spears.
Oh, you're so right. You're the champion of the Money Show for this week. I love it. I love it. Ndumiso, well done. Well done. Well done. Yes, Britney Spears' father has officially been removed from his role as the guardian in his daughter's 13-year conservatorship after allegations of abuse. Ndumiso, let's just ask you one more question. What are you going to be doing this weekend just to celebrate the fact that you're the champion of the Money Show?
I'll be spending it with my family. I'll be visiting my father. And just having fun, that's it.
That sounds great. Ndumiso in Centurion. There we go. The champion of the Money Show on Cape Talk and 702.